Welcome back to another episode of Persuasion by the Pint. I'm Jonathan Taylor, along with
Sean Oso McCool.
Oso McCool.
Yes. Oso McCool.
Been a while, Sean.
It has. I was in jury duty last week.
Yeah.
Did you know, Jonathan, that you can have a jury trial of your peers? Well, it's peers is a stretch.
Yeah.
Did you know you could have a jury trial for a speeding ticket?
What a waste.
I'm not talking about like
it's got
a speeding ticket. Like I'm not talking about like reckless driving was the citation. No, the citation was speeding. Specifically, I'm probably not allowed to say this, but you know, 9 miles over the speed limit.
Nine miles.
A 74 and a 65.
In the state of Texas, you can have a trial by jury for a speeding ticket.
Apparently, because I was on that jury.
I've never heard of such a thing.
It was a riveting case that lasted about an hour, including our deliberation. Basically, yeah, I can't.
How
say
much
what
of
happened,
our taxpayer money went for that?
Well, you figure we were actually in the deliberation room. We were actually figuring that out. We were like, okay, wait a second. We've got two prosecuting attorneys, public, you know, prosecutors.
Yeah,
because it was the state versus this person. Mm-hmm. We had a state trooper who had issued the citation who had to come in from, you know, to the court. A judge, a bailiff, a judge's assistant. So there's like six people right there, five or six people right there.
Yeah.
Plus the six jurors that were picked, plus the 25 jurors pool that was brought in, you know, to be selected from. So, for a speeding ticket with a max fine of $200.
A lot of waste. And I would think better of Texas. I thought Texas would be the last.
I totally get like a jury by your peers, but there's just some things that don't warrant a jury, in my opinion. Like that just seems a little.
That's one.
Isn't that what a judge is for? Like just to kind of make those decisions?
I mean, that's crazy. Because I mean, what qualifies this for a jury? Because you've been before the judge before for a speeding violation. You go in there and there's like 30 other people there, you know, and you know, you're waiting for your time to go. Yeah. It's like one after the other. Boom, 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 boom.
Yeah. For some reason, this was a jury trial. I don't know what happened or how it got to that point, but yeah, I was sitting there, they were doing jury selection and the prosecuting attorney was like, today we're going to be talking about speeding. And I was like, you gotta be kidding me. And then I was like, well, surely this guy was doing like, you know, 80 and a 35 and it's a school zone on a busy, you know, Monday morning or something. Yeah. Right.
Nope. Yeah. 9 miles. That's a gimme. I mean, that to me, that's like within the range of,
within the range of error. And the guy, the defendant was defending himself and he did a horrible job. So, didn't even have an attorney with him. And this is a year and a half ago.
Right.
I could probably go to jail now for talking about this publicly, but
I don't think so. I mean, there's people that talk about high profile cases afterwards. So I don't think you're not giving away anything.
No names or anything like
outside of the ridiculous nature of such a, such an endeavor to have a trial by jury for something like that for a misdemeanor.
It's crazy. Yeah. It's absolutely crazy. So poor guy, he was terrible at defending himself. So
he paid the fine.
We had no sympathy for
him. Had to pay the fine.
It's like, you drug us here for this, man. You couldn't even make it worthwhile. Like,
yeah.
Put up a fight, buddy.
Yeah.
So this guy
was further down the road. I see what happened. He went to court initially and he said, nope, I am pleading not guilty, Your Honor. He's one of those rare people that say, you know what? I'm guilty. And the judge says, you know what? You just pay the fine and we'll be done with it. No, he was not going down without a fight.
Yeah, he was that guy, but he did a terrible job of preparing.
Yeah.
Like he did not come prepared to fight the the prosecution.
Well, then he deserves to pay.
Exactly.
For wasting everybody's time, energy, resources. Yeah, there you go.
That's pretty much what all six of us agreed. So,
only got six jurors at that too. So,
yeah, apparently that happened when I went last year and I got picked for the jury. We never had the actual trial because they settled before, but it was also six juries. So apparently that's a thing here in Texas as well. So.
Okay. All right.
But yeah.
Well, thanks for updating us on the legal system for for traffic violations. Never the lesson here to everyone listening. Always plead guilty and just take your punishment and move on. Sometimes if you're lucky, like I've been in one situation where the cop doesn't show up, and even though you say you're guilty, the cop is not there, so they throw it out anyway. So you may get lucky in that regard. But
yeah. And I don't know if they do, like I know in some states they do the fine plus court fees.
Yeah.
Which could be who knows what. So
exactly.
Yep. But anyway, let's talk about, since we're talking about speeding, let's talk about drinking.
Our topic, we got to hint our topic today. We haven't
let's tease our topic a little bit. Yeah.
We're going to be talking about mind hijacking copywriting strategies. This comes from some of Dan Kennedy's old hacks. And I've been going through it recently for sales letters in my industry and kind of pulling out some old stuff, going back through some old stuff. Always good to reference good old DK and every now and then and go back through some of his old stuff. And this one was actually one of his more recent courses. I think it was back in 2016, 2017.
Yeah, 2016 is what it said on the PDF.
Yeah.
Which we will not be sharing because that would be a copyright violation.
That's right. Yeah,
we cannot. His attorneys are much better than ours. So.
Yes. That's one that it will be worth a court appearance for, but we won't be in that one. So but we will
give credit.
We will give credit for sure.
Yeah. So it should be some good stuff. We're going to be talking in that section. There's a couple different things that he talked about. Some what he calls stacking.
Yeah. Cold reading,
which I have a book on my desk here to go into that more if we want to. So yeah, some cool stuff that I've always been fascinated with, and it's good to have a reminder to add some of this stuff back in.
Right.
To email sequences, sales letters, social media posts even.
Yeah.
And then we may even do some screen share here with ChatGPT on how you could do some of this stuff.
Here's the benefit of having this kind of information, talking about these kind of hijacks nowadays with ChatGPT. It's going to accelerate your ability to write some of this stuff or create some of this stuff in your marketing. Right. So
exactly, because a lot of people are still, you know, a lot of my friends and copywriters, they're like, I can't really write copy like that. And I'm like, well, if you know what to say, right, you know how to prompt it.
Yeah.
You can take that knowledge that you have and, you know, they just haven't played around with it enough to really do it. But I mean, at some point you'll just be able to voice it and
exactly.
You don't even need to know these things. It'll all be built in. So,
right.
All right. So what do you have over there on your neck of the woods?
Well, I'm excited about this one. I have I'm going to share this real quick with, I got a little innocent gun. This is a new one that I've had. I'm not sure that I've had the Scottish oatmeal stout. Maybe I have. I don't remember it. If I did. But this seems like a new one. I've had some other versions, but this is a Irish whiskey cask, Scottish oatmeal stout, vanilla chocolate or vanilla coffee chocolate. It's been aged 51 days, right? 51 days.
Wow.
Not a lot to read about this other than the fact it's 6.1%. And it's a malt, amber, chocolate malts.
Looks good.
Yeah.
Yeah. So. Is that a green bottle or is it just the green label? Because it's just dark beer. It's clear.
I think it's actually the green bottle. I actually have the can today, so I don't have that.
Cool. Let's
see my can here.
All right.
I got to remove this screen. It's getting in the way. Stop sharing. There. All right. Here we go.
Yeah. So I have got from Vista Brewing out in Driftwood, Texas. I've got a Mexican hot chocolate imperial stout.
Oh, yum.
So this is it's this middle one here, the hot chocolate imperial stout. It's got vanilla, cinnamon, a little bit of heat, bitter chocolate. It's 9.1% ABV. And
a little heat,
I am.
Where they put a little, what's with the heat? What are they adding? A little,
does it say
paprika in there? Some pepper,
hot touch pepper. Of heat and smoke from ancho and cascabel chili peppers. Ooh. So, chili peppers,
chili peppers.
Yeah,
all right, hold that.
I've been putting
hold that glass up.
Oh, look at that shot of the ring light in my brew there. It's like a mirror, like an obsidian mirror. All right, cheers.
Cheers.
Mine's a little flat as far as like the carbonation part of it. But the flavor's good. Not getting a little bit of chocolate. Definitely a little more stouty than I thought it would be. Thought it'd be a little more chocolatey, but definitely the stout's coming through pretty strong. I'm going to give this a 4.5.
Mine's a little flat too. So I don't know. It's funny that you say that. Mine's, I mean, it's good, but it doesn't have the, I mean, it does. It's just really flat on the back end. I'm going to give this one a 4.3.
Okay.
It's, I like the flavor, the chocolate. You can taste the chocolate. You can taste the coffee, a little bit of the coffee in there. I'm getting hints of that, but, really, really flat.
Mine has zero head when I try to pour it.
Like nothing. And this one has a little bit of a head too, but it was just not, just not much there.
Yeah, I might need to get a nitro stout next week or something.
I know.
So, all right. Well, let's jump in to mind hijacking copywriting strategies that work every single time without fail ever.
Without fail. There's a bunch of them. We're not going to go through every one. So we're
The two PDFs were about 300 pages total. Yeah. So probably don't want to go line by line through that.
No,
that might be a little much. For anybody.
No, we can highlight, I think, cold reading, because you've got something on cold reading. And then there's some stuff that we can play around with AI. I do want to mention one of my favorite, hypnotic or mind hijacking tips is on creating problems in your industry. And that's one of the reasons I went back through this is just like spending time on what are other industry segments or other areas within our industry that I can utilize and create problems that don't exist. And I always go back to he uses the quote in here. I forgot the guy.
Lasker.
Yeah, Lasker, there is no law that requires a problem to exist before a solution is created for it, manufactured for it, sold to cure it. And it says producing cures only for already existent and familiar problems reveals a stunning lack of imagination and adult mind.
So we should probably give some context for those that don't know.
Yeah.
He gave a couple of examples in here. Mm-hmm. Listerine.
Yes.
Bad breath was invented by Listerine. Listerine was not created to solve bad breath. Mm-hmm. Bad breath was created to sell Listerine.
That's right.
Which up to that point had been a antiseptic for surgery, not something you put in your mouth.
That's right. Yeah, the word halitosis was actually invented back in the 1920s when halitosis was invented. They actually took the word, it's a Greek, it's a two part is Greek. It's like halitus or this is halitus or halitus or something like that refers to breath. And then lactosis is the Greek word or something like that. The back end is a medical term. So they really just invented this. They invented it out of nothing. to create a word that sounds scary. Halitosis is kind of an ugly word. You think, I mean, somebody that rolls off.
Especially, well, since they gave it that term. So.
Halitosis. Oof. I don't like that.
So halitosis, what do you call it? Etymology.
Yeah. It gives a history, gives a little history lesson on halitosis.
Yeah. So the word halitosis comes from the Latin word, halitus, which means breath.
Breath. Yeah.
And the Greek suffix osis, which means diseased.
Disease. Ugh. Sounds awful.
There you go. Diseased breath.
Mm. Makes sense, right? Because it was originally, as you mentioned, originally Listerine was nothing. They were selling it to dentists, you know? Yep. It's like, we're not making any money selling it just to dentists. We need to figure out how to sell this direct to the consumer. So let's, what do we do, Sean? What can we do?
Let's make a problem. Now, I don't know how they got the leap.
Yeah.
From surgery and Excepta to let's swish this stuff around in your mouth. I'm not sure how they made that leap. I would like to be in on that meeting. But
hey, Joe, I want you to drink I want to swish the stuff in the mouth. What's the first thing that comes to your mind?
Where's that new intern?
No, who knows? I mean, it must feel like it's doing something. Yeah.
Don't swallow this time. The last guy swallowed. You don't want to do that. You just want to swish it, spit it out. Yeah. So interesting, though, when I looked this up on the Google.
Yeah.
Check this out. It says over here, Bard over here on the right says, interestingly, the term itself is relatively new, first appeared in the 1870s. But contrary to popular belief, it wasn't invented by the mouthwash brand Listerine, although their marketing campaign significantly contributed to its widespread use.
Oh, okay. All right. So a little correction there. They just...
Yeah, we don't know if Bard is right. I mean, you know.
Yeah.
You know, who knows? But
the key is they latched on, Listerine latched on to it and really made it scary. You know, made it a common word.
Yeah, and one of the other examples that Dan was talking about in this was Absorbine Junior.
Yeah.
You know, for athlete's foot. And now it's more for, you know, muscle cramps and things like that.
Yep. It's a stretch.
Yeah. So yeah, it's all kinds of stuff. And he also talked about, you know, in this section, he talked about, you know, a pretty common sinus drip, which a lot of people have. Yep. How there was a 70-page direct mail piece, probably written by Clayton Makepeace or Paris Lampropoulos or one of these guys.
Right.
David Deutsch, one of those. Mm-hmm. 70 pages on how this thing was going to just absolutely ruin your life if you don't get it fixed. Mm-hmm. So it's like, you know, all the different problems you could cause and all this kind of stuff. It just made the problem really, really big.
Right.
Because if it's not a big problem, people aren't going to do anything, especially on front end acquisition type pieces.
Right.
These are cold traffic type offers, whether it's Listerine, you know, Crest, now we've got gingivitis and we've got all these terms. Another one that comes to mind wasn't mentioned in here, but it's one of my favorite stories. Is the 10,000 steps.
Yeah.
That was invented in 1960s or 50s, I think, by a Japanese company that made pedometers.
Right.
And they were looking for a way to sell more pedometers.
Right.
And they were looking at the Chinese, whatever it's called, alphabet or whatever. And the number 10,000 looks like a man walking.
Yeah.
Like the Japanese symbol for it. So they were like, oh, let's use that 10,000 steps.
Now it's
like gospel. Now it's gospel, right?
Yeah.
It's
okay.
Like,
yeah. Did you get your 10,000 steps in? Ah, man, I'm right at 9,950. Oh no.
And for years, all the scientific data backed it up.
Yeah, exactly.
Because of course, if you walk, you're going to be healthier.
And it led to many people buying Fitbits and Apple Watches for that very reason. Right.
Yeah. And nobody ever questions the 10,000 steps. I think they have done some studies now that say it's really more like 7,000 is good.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's so funny how that just like took over.
Yeah.
You know, just.
Well, here's another one. Here's another one that comes to mind. Identity theft, right? Identity theft insurance, right? How many people buy, you know, insurance companies coming up with identity theft insurance?
LifeLock.
Exactly. I mean, that's relatively, I mean, when I say relatively new, that's been within like, what, you know, since the internet, you know, has gotten more and more popular, maybe like a decade or so ago is when it really took off. But yeah, I mean, something that never existed and companies are out there thinking, boom, we got a problem here. How often does somebody's identity get those? Yeah, I've never been around anybody that's ever or known anyone that had their, I'm sure it happens. I mean, but how common
is that? I'm sure it happens a lot, but is it because companies started promoting identity theft protection? And all the crooks were like, oh, that's a good idea. Why didn't we do that? Exactly.
What is this? Is it chicken or the egg? You don't know, right?
I mean, yeah.
So we were playing around. I was playing around before, and then you were talking about prompts. Like, so here's a tip for anybody out there that uses Bard or ChatGPT or any of these AI prompting platforms where you can literally take your industry. Sean, you mentioned there's a prompt that can be used for prompting on creating problems.
Yeah. So let me share the screen here. So I actually saw this in Forbes, and they've been doing a lot of these articles recently, okay. You know, because everybody's playing with chat, right?
Right.
So this is the prompt here, this whole thing. So okay. I'm going to copy that.
Yep.
We'll play with your industry.
Yep.
So let me get a new chat going here. We'll use GPT-4. I'm just going to paste this in. So my company provides, so what do you provide, Jonathan?
There's several different things.
I'll just pick one.
let's go. High-performance carbon fiber.
For a target audience of, describe your target audience.
Would be aerospace. It could be aerospace, the sports industry.
Like equipment?
Yeah.
Sports equipment?
Sports equipment.
We'll do that and that. Okay, and then it's going to say, your task is to find my target customer's biggest worries. Ask me 3 clarifying questions. So I'm going to ask you those when it gives them about this audience one by one, then provide a succinct list of their 5 biggest fears. Ask if those fears sound accurate and suggest others to replace any that don't. We will iterate together until this is final. I think you could actually speed this up. So firstly, could you specify which aspect of aerospace and sports equipment manufacturing customers are most focused on? For example, are they primarily concerned with the performance and durability of the carbon fiber, its weight reduction capabilities, or perhaps its cost effectiveness and supply chain reliability?
Let's just see
what happens. Could you share more about the level of experience and size of the companies within your target audience? Are they well-established industry leaders, startups, or a mix of both?
A mix of both.
Lastly, are there specific regions or markets, North America, Europe, Asia, where your customers are primarily located?
North America.
All right. So here's the 5 biggest fears. Let's see if these hit home for you, Jonathan, since you're out in the field. Supply chain disruptions, concerns over the reliability and consistency of supply, especially given global logistic challenges and reliance on specialized materials, regulatory compliance and safety standards, cost management, technical adaptation and innovation pace, and then quality and performance consistency.
Yeah, those last three, cost management, anxiety over cost effectiveness, and then, you know, technical adaptation. Sometimes these things take time to it takes time to get qualified. Performance and consistency. There's a lot of testing that goes in to meet high standards. So it's got to have strength standards.
So they sound accurate, or would you want to make any adjustments?
Yeah, that's for the most part, those are good.
Okay. So now this part, there was a follow-up question. So let me see what that was so this was for social media content. Mm-hmm. So let's just take this real quick. So it says, I'm creating content for a platform. So we'll just say LinkedIn, right? Because that's probably your audience.
Yep.
To alleviate my target audience's biggest fears, for each of the 5 fears we just defined, suggest 2 ideas for a piece of social media content that would serve to alleviate this fear linked to my product or to an outcome my product provides. I don't want the content to be self-promotional. Instead, it should tell a story or introduce an idea that speaks to this concern and reassures my customer that they don't need to have it. See what happens. And then I'm going to work in something else here that was not in the article. So content idea, share a case study of a successful aerospace project that utilized your carbon fiber. Content two, educational piece. So that's it's going by, it's giving you an idea for each of the five fears, and it's giving two ideas per fear. So we're going to pick one. I want it to actually do one of them. Which one do you want it to do?
Number one or two, create an infographic.
Let's see if it can do that.
The story of the athlete sounds pretty interesting, an athlete or a sports team.
All right, so I just said do this one. It was number two that said suggested create an infographic for those of you listening. Mm-hmm. Their chat's content idea was create an infographic comparing the weight to strength ratio of carbon fiber to traditional materials used in aerospace and sports equipment. Highlight the advantages of carbon fiber in enhancing performance without sacrificing strength. So I just said do this one and copy and pasted what they had.
That's cool. Whew,
that's a little busy, but yeah. Way too busy. So let's try the other one. Let's try number two. Now, obviously it's going to make this up, but it could give us the template that we need to write. Oh, now it's going to try to do an image. So I'm going to say, write this story based on your idea. Number two. All right, so now it says, in the world of competitive cycling, every millisecond counts. The story of Emma, a dedicated cyclist who dreams of reaching the pinnacle of her sport, is one of transformation and triumph, powered by innovation and equipment technology. Emma's been competing at a high level for years, dedication unmatched, training tirelessly. She needed a breakthrough to the tier. She needed something more. That's when she discovered the potential of carbon fiber. After months of research, blah, 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 the real test came in the national championships, blah, blah, blah. Not bad. Not a bad story.
No.
And it kind of, you could take this and then plug in your real things.
Yeah.
Or you could just say, hey, here's an example of how this might, you know, look.
Right.
The other thing you do is now let's try this. So we'll move and we'll segue into our next thing, which is cold reading. Now insert. Now use the same story, but insert some cold reading techniques so that the reader really gets into the story. Let's see if they can do anything. All right. So now it says, imagine stepping into the shoes of Emma, a cyclist whose heart beats in sync with the rhythmic turn of her bike's wheels. You've been in her position, haven't you? That moment when you stand at the brink of a breakthrough, yearning for something that will catapult you beyond the boundaries of your current achievements. Like Emma, you understand the essence of perseverance, the countless hours of dedication that mold the foundation of success. Yet there's always that lingering quest for the missing piece, that edge that transforms effort into victory. That is so much better starting.
Yeah.
Paragraph.
Yeah, I like that.
Because now you're involving them into it. That's almost, and that's pretty good copy right there without any edits.
Yep.
You know, if you were to open, I mean, that's almost like the opening of a TED talk. Mm-hmm. So it just goes on. It continues to like insert them into the story and say, hey, you can realize this. You can understand this.
That's good.
That's what's cool is that, you know, these tools, they know, and I would say actually Claude is better at copywriting than chat.
Yeah. I think so.
I just think chat's a little easier to use sometimes. And for something like this, if you might want to end up with an image, I want to go back to that image and see if it, even though it's busy.
Can you zoom in on that? Cause I can't read a thing.
No, can't get it to, I'd have to export it.
Like I can't even make sense of the
That is one thing I've noticed with chats, with a lot of chat stuff is that it gets a lot of the imagery gets overdone. I saw somebody post about this on Facebook. Like, it's like a first year artist student. They try to put everything in instead of like simplifying down.
Yeah.
So, you know, if we said simplify this down, make it more readable or something like that, it might could have given us something different.
It doesn't make sense. I don't even know what that means.
It's that is one thing with chats imagery. It's terrible with text.
Yeah.
Like it will just butcher text like big time. So, you usually want to take their idea and then create your own prompt for it. But even then, infographics a little bit of a stretch right now. Yeah. Although there's probably over here in the GPTs, I bet there's like an infographic genius bro. But, you know, there's all these pre-made GPTs now that you can get. So infographic creators, things like that. Now, I don't know how much, you know, info you have to plug in.
Right.
I don't want to do that right now. But so, yeah, I mean, there's, you know, once you get some basic information in there, you can then start adding in some of the copywriting elements, you know, like cold reading, which is one of the big things he was, Dan was talking about in this section. And I've got this book
called Cold Reading,
How to Become a Good Mentalist. So one of my favorite shows ever, Jonathan, was,
The Mentalist
on CBS.
Rachel Patrick loves Jane. That show.
Yep. Yeah. It's a great show. She just likes watching Patrick Jane.
Yeah. She wouldn't admit that, but I'm pretty sure that had a lot to do with it.
Yeah. The curl, the blonde, the
curly blonde. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Like, come on. Well-dressed, classic car, like, yeah. But, you know, it's funny because, like, this book, like, gives away all the what psychic, you know, mind readers do to kind of get you comfortable. And there's, like, a section in here where it's, like, it talks about most people. Mm-hmm. And there's certain things that most people have experienced in their life. So, for instance, most people see themselves as less prejudiced than others in their community. Most people have been involved in some childhood accident, which involved water. Mm-hmm. Most have had a scar on their left knee. Most people feel they are resourceful and could make it by themselves if stranded on a tropical island. That's why we have Survivor, right? All these people applying to Survivor, they think they can do it. Have a thought perhaps during adolescence about suicide. I would say that's definitely true.
For sure.
That one's probably growing. I don't know how old this book is. It's pretty old. But most adults have problems or aches associated with their feet, especially women, because of high heels.
Right.
So, yeah, it's interesting. Like, there's this whole list of things, and you can use that in your copy, your emails, everything else. You can use these little tidbits that are kind of common knowledge, but they feel very personal. You know, we've said before on the show that which is most personal is most universal.
Yep.
So that's really what all of this thrives off of, is that, you know, here's another example. In most people's homes, you would find things that need sorting out, like old clothes, photographs, or documents. Mm-hmm. Mementos from childhood, dolls, some toys, books, jewelry from a deceased family member. That's a good one. Like that, that's something you could see a psychic using, right? Oh, picturing, Jonathan, like a piece of jewelry from a relative that's passed on.
Yep.
And you'd be like, yeah, it's in the top drawer of my wife's dresser.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. So, I mean, it's little stuff like that, but what are some of the examples he gave in the PDF when we talk about cold reading?
Let's see.
Then we can come back to stacking. Yeah. So here's an example of a cold reading sentence. I see you're at a time of your life when certain new decisions are in order. You're at a kind of a crossroads and need to make a choice soon.
Yeah.
You can see how that might work in a follow-up email, for instance. Let's say somebody registered for a webinar and they attended the webinar, but they didn't buy anything. You might do a follow-up email that says something like that, or one of these other ones. You are usually a person of strong character and determination, yet you are at times so considerate of others' feelings that you do not always assert yourself, even when you know you are right. This also sometimes leads to undue delay or procrastination over necessary action that is obvious to you. For instance, you're probably thinking about joining our program, but you think you don't have the money, or your spouse is telling you it's not a good idea, right? So if I started with that, you know, you're strong, determined, but you know you're right, and then I followed up with, hey, you're probably thinking about this, because they probably are if they open the email, right? Because we know if they attended a webinar, they heard the pitch, and then they open the next email the next day, there's some level of interest there, we can assume.
Right.
Or else they would have just unsubscribed and stopped opening the email.
Of course. Yeah.
So they want it at some capacity. So if you can tap into that, then they're like, yeah, I do kind of want it, but yeah, I can't really afford it, or my husband, you know, wife or whatever, you know, that's the kind of cold reading that can get in somebody's head.
Yeah.
And then as long as you have a good, you know, follow up and reason to move forward, despite that, you can really get their attention.
I mean, you think about this, how this is used on us. You know, if I were to say to you, Sean, I feel like you're at a crossroads of your life. You know, if, you know, what man or woman, you know, at a, in their 40s or 50s, you know, probably, you know, kids, you know, you're transitioning to a new time of life. You know, if kids are moving out of the house, you know, yeah, I mean, that could, or you've got, you know, something going, everybody's always got something.
There's always a crossroads, right?
Yeah, there's always a crossroads. There's a crossroads in life. So it's like you throw that out there and people are like, oh yeah, you're right.
How do they know? How do they know? They're in my head. They're reading, or as we used to say in the old days, right? They're reading my mail.
Yeah, or it's like, so, Sean, I'll bet you have a tendency to be critical of yourself at times.
Oh, yeah, I do.
Like, who's not, you know, who's not have some, you know, I mean, we're all critical of ourselves at times, if we, whether we, you know, admit it or not.
Yeah, and this is another way that I used ChatGPT before the show. I said, give me a list. All I put in was, I said, give me a list of cold reading opening lines that I might use in copywriting. Mm-hmm. And it said, you're someone who values quality and authenticity, aren't you? It's not just about the price tag. Yeah. It's about what feels right.
Yep.
It's like, well, of course it's about what feels right. Yes, of course. You know, unless you're writing to engineers, that may or may not be right.
Yeah.
You'd have to take a different approach. Here's another one. At times you find yourself wondering if you're making the most out of your life, don't you? It's a common feeling, searching for that deeper meaning. Mm-hmm. Oof, yeah, everybody can relate to that. You know, you pride yourself on being a rational thinker, but you also know there's more to life than what can be logically explained. It's that balance that makes you, you.
Yeah.
That one's pretty good.
Yeah.
Right. And you could then move into either direction you wanted to go with the logic or the things that can't be logically explained.
Right.
You value deep, meaningful connections over having a wide circle of acquaintance. It's the quality of relationships, not the quantity, that matters to you. Mm-hmm. Like, most people are not going to argue with these.
No, of course not.
So now you can, you could take an ad, for instance, or even a social post that you've written. You could drop it into chat and say, insert 2 or 3 cold reading lines into this post.
Yeah.
So the reader feels more involved, and it would take some of these ideas and just work it into the post. So it really resonates on a different level.
Yep.
Same thing. So we've talked about cold reading, but there's also Barnum statements, which you just read one of. Mm-hmm. You have a tendency to be critical for yourself. And this is really what makes horoscopes work as well.
Yeah.
These general statements that, because you already believe them, they sound more true.
Yeah.
And that's a good example of one. But you can do the same thing. It's like, give me a list of Barnum statements that would apply to buyers. What are they called? Buyer's agents? Is that people you deal with?
Yeah. Sourcing managers, buyers. I'll give you an example. I use one in an email to a buyer. I think I said something to the extent of, you seem like someone who follows industry reports and commodity prices on a regular basis. There's a stretch. You're a buyer, right? I mean, but to him, you know, he responded, responded right away when I sent that out to him. So,
yeah. And you, I mean, cause it's true. So here's what it came up with. Here's 6 it came up with, 7. You often find yourself balancing the need for cost effectiveness with a demand for quality, striving to make decisions that benefit the factory in the long term.
Yep.
Nailed it.
Yeah, absolutely.
You take pride in your negotiation skills, knowing that every dollar saved contributes directly to the bottom line.
Right.
Yet you never compromise on the integrity of what you procure. So that's a great one. If you know you're going to be higher priced. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I know you negotiate, but you never compromise the integrity, right? So if you know you got better quality, even though it's more expensive, you know, you're priming them basically with a statement like that.
Yeah. I like that number 8. You understand the complexity of global sourcing, navigating the challenges of regulations, tariffs, which is so true.
Yeah. So these are all like really good things that you could use as opening lines and in a cold email.
Yeah.
You know, anything like that.
Yeah.
Cause then you'll immediately, they're like, oh, this guy knows my position, knows the stress I'm under, the job that I have to do.
And yeah. That number 12 was similar to what I did. You appreciate the importance of staying up to date with industry trends and market dynamics. I kind of use that to, in so many words.
Yeah.
And that's an effective way. Cause you're not only are you, you're cold reading, but also you're kind of stroking their ego a little bit.
Yeah. A lot of cold reading does stroke the ego. And, you know, the main thing is you want them to feel like they're kind of in, you're in their head and right. that you understand. I mean, it goes back to, right. You want them to feel understood.
Yeah.
Is the main thing.
Right.
All right. What else did you want to cover in that bit? While you're looking, I'm going to show this very important comment we got. Hello, sorry for bothering you. I want to offer promotion of your channel, viewers, followers, views, chatbots, etc. The price is lower than any competitor.
This person needs to tune in more often, right?
I mean, they need to finish listening to the show before they send these things.
Yeah, for sure.
Here, let's see. It's an image, so I can't. They won't let me copy it. Interesting. I was going to copy and paste it so I could get a better opening response. Can you hear my dog whining over here in the corner?
I can. You had mentioned stacking. I'm trying to find the stacking area.
That was early in the in that section. It's on page stacking. 17.
Okay.
16 and 17.
Yes.
The dog is going crazy for those listeners that can hear it, because mom should be home shortly and I'm not paying enough attention to the dog. So,
I'm trying to remember the, there's so many of these. Oh, stacking.
Yeah. So on page 15, he gives kind of the bullet point list without the examples. So stacking is basically where we call this a chain of logic sometimes in copywriting. But the one he's talking about here is one, there's different formulas you can use for stacking, but one that he's talking about here, this was 2016 that he was talking about this. So that a certain presidential candidate was using quite effectively and still is.
Yeah.
You would have, here's the stack, a dark item, an embellishment, an even darker item, a darkest item, light at the end of the tunnel, then finally personal positive benefits.
Right.
So here was an example he gave. We're going to build a wall.
Yeah.
No borders equals no country. They're pouring across our border. We're getting the drugs, the criminals. Mexico is getting our money. Who's going to pay for the wall? Mexico's going to pay for the wall.
Yeah.
So it's this stack of like bad, 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 worse, really bad.
Yeah.
Hope.
Right.
You know, and it just works really well for.
Yeah. So repeating that, you start with the dark, an embellishment of an even darker item.
Mm-hmm.
A darkest item. It gets worse and worse and worse.
So but three. So this goes back to the kind of the rule of threes we've talked about before, right?
Yep.
So you got three things that are all dark and you put them from dark to darkest. Right. Dark, darker, darkest.
That's right.
You know? So you're really sucking them down into this pit of despair. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden you're going to give them hope.
The light at the end of the tunnel. It's not an oncoming train. It's a real light of hope.
Right.
You're giving them after you've just completely run them down the road with, you know, darker, darkest. And then you, you provide the light and then the positive benefits. Right. So it's fear plays into so much of this, you know?
Yeah. I mean, this is basically, you know, another version of PAS, right?
Yep.
Problem, agitate, solution.
Exactly.
It's basically the same thing. but it's just a little bit more, it's a different way to think about it, mm-hmm. but it is the same thing. I know the best performing Facebook ads that I've written for clients have followed basically this idea. So I'll usually start with bad news for target audience, ...
Yeah.
And then I'll say, you know, whatever would be bad in their areas, like, oh, you're being, you know, it's overworked or the economy or, you know, there's, it's all kind of, you know, whatever the big top two or three problems are that I think they're dealing with based on my research.
Yeah.
I'll put those in there and then I'll be like, fortunately, you know, because you're reading this ad, or fortunately, there's a solution for this. And then I get to the light of the tunnel, and then I get specific about the benefits of whatever the next call, whatever the call to action is, right?
Right.
So join this webinar, attend this live, you know, whatever it might be. So these work really well. And a lot of people don't like to do this, you know, because we don't like to lead with fear. But the fact is it works. And the other fact is they already have these fears. It's not like you're reminding them of them, but you're not completely creating these fears. A lot of people already have these fears.
Yeah.
You know, it's like in the financial world, right? Most people are worried about not having enough money or running out of money or whatever it might be, depending on where they are in their life. Trying to play catch up.
Right.
You know, all that kind of stuff.
A great example of this would be, and we've referenced that, you know, the End of America, the ad or the report, you know, it does a great job of like, of the stacking, where it's just like one bad thing after another, you know, that came out in 2010.
Yeah.
It's a prime example because it's one of the most successful campaigns ever. I guess in the financial.
And you have to remember the timing of that was really important too, because it was after the financial crisis. It was kind of the bottom of the financial crisis.
Right.
So people were really depressed, mm-hmm. you know, even though that was probably the bottom and things were starting to turn around then.
Yeah.
It was the bottom and people felt. So the timing was impeccable on that, which the writer that wrote that is really good at timing.
Of course.
So, and understanding market sentiment, you know, mm-hmm. so, you know, that's like, you know, some of these stuff that Trump talks about in these speeches where he uses the stacking, you know, right now he could talk about gas, he'd talk about groceries, he'd talk about, you know, those kind of things because that's on people's mind right now.
Yeah, for sure.
And so even though some of the economic numbers are actually pretty good and better than they've been in a while, mm-hmm. there are certain pockets that you could key in on, like gas and groceries, and housing prices, you know, the cost, just the basic cost of living that people would absolutely be like, yeah, it's terrible. It's the worst it's ever been, you know, all that stuff.
Yeah.
It'd be pretty easy to sway them to that. So, and there's so much good stuff in here. Yeah. You know, it's, if you can find it, it's called Mind Hijacking Copywriting.
Yep.
I don't know if it's available on, you know, I think Magnetic Marketing is the new home, right? With Russell Brunson and all that.
Right.
I don't know if it's there or not. Mm-hmm. but if you were to Google, you could probably find it.
Yep.
That's all I'll say.
Yeah. There's a ton of them in here. There's like 20 something, I think like 20 something hijacks that we could go through. We might do these on another episode, but those are like the big ones. The cold reading is huge. It's very effective.
The stacking and the cold reading, and the inventing a problem, those three that we covered today, mm-hmm. those are really like what make up the lead or the first, you know, 5, 10, 20% of the copy.
Right.
If you get that right, then it's pretty formulaic after that. It's pretty much just kind of laying out your case after that. Because you've got them, you pretty much got them if they start nodding their head and agreeing with you in those first few paragraphs. And as long as you don't say something stupid, you know, and as we say in face-to-face sales, Jonathan, you don't talk past the sale.
Exactly.
Then you'll probably have them if you get that opening right.
Right.
So, yeah, there's a lot of good stuff in here. some examples, and he's even got some, at least one PDF I'm looking at.
Here's another. It's, we can throw this out there. How to stop disqualification in its tracks. So this is the method of like arguing the merits of a proposition. So rather than, if you're arguing, rather than arguing the merits of a proposition that you can lose weight and keep it off for life, or that you can start a home-based business in your spare time and earn a doctor's income in 10 weeks or 10 hours a week, or that you can get out of that you can get out of debt and live debt free, or that most people will let the, or it says most people will let the proposition slide unchallenged and instead disqualify only themselves or their kind from it. This is the pre-existing negative mindset. So here's an example, like, no matter what, you know, no matter what your blank. So here's a, you know, it's like example of an ad, the amazing seduction secrets of a skinny, ugly 6 foot geek from California that, that could get you all the girls you want, no matter. And there's the key word, no matter what your age, what your looks or age. So,
yeah, that's where, like, you know, in the headlines or stuff, and I do this in ads too, you know, or emails or whatever, you know, even in this economy.
Yeah.
You know, even if is another one, like no matter what, even if.
Right. Even if, and then blah, 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 like the whatever circumstances you have in your mind,
right,
that could completely disqualify that.
So yeah, even in this economy, and even if, you know, you've never done X, Y, Z before.
Right.
Those are classic things. And you can take, you know, if you go through a document like this, you can take those formulas that are mentioned in here and you start plugging them into ChatGPT around your niche.
Right.
You just say, hey, I'm in this niche. I want to use this copywriting formula. Help me fill in the blanks.
Yeah.
And it will do it. And it will come up with some decent stuff because you're giving it a formula to work with. That's when it's really powerful, is when you give it a formula to work with,
right,
it'll go out and find the blanks to fill in that you may overlook.
Mm-hmm.
But you do, for now, you need to have the formulas to really, you know, help dial it in and put guardrails on it. Otherwise it just goes all over the place. If you were just say, you know, write me a great headline, it would come out cheesy.
Yeah.
It wouldn't be a great headline.
Right.
But if you give it a couple examples, it'll do really, really well.
Sure.
Yeah, I think that's good for now. We're about that.
Yeah.
About that time point.
Yeah, we'll post a link to or send me the link so I can post the link to the article on prompting. That'd be interesting to our listeners.
Yeah, I'm going to go ahead and grab that and put it in the comments while we're live, because I think it'll spit it out to a few places with the magic of whatever, the internet.
Yes. There we go.
Forbes will appreciate that. I'm sure they'll send us royalties of some kind.
Of course they will. There we go.
All right. Yeah, that's a quick and easy, just, you know, remember that URL that we just flashed on the screen.
If you didn't remember this one, how about that one?
Yeah.
Now, we'll have it in the show notes. You need to go to, this will be Persuasion by the Pint, episode 3. What is it?
Yeah, 30? I forgot to put the banner up today.
Yeah, we're at episode 344. Okay. And you can access the link there. I'll have it posted in the show notes. So,
very cool. Good stuff.
All right, Sean. Good stuff. Yeah, it is. I'm going to continue going through. I went through the whole report, but I'm actually listening to the audios on that. So
how different are the audios from the PDF?
It's just Dan talking. Dan.
Yeah.
You know, it's good. It's Dan's unique way of presenting. You know, he does a lot of ahs. So.
Yeah. Yeah, and the tone he uses and some of his little mutterings are always kind of funny.
Yeah,
I'm sure that some of those are edited out. So
I think so.
It's kind of fun to listen to him. He's just, you know, he's Grumpy Dan, you know?
Grumpy Dan.
Apparently there was a big Russell Brunson Dan Kennedy broadcast today. So
was there?
Yeah. So our timing is good. People will be searching for that. Maybe they'll find our episode.
So to my knowledge, Dan's still putting out a newsletter.
But everything's under Russell Brunson.
Yes. Yeah.
Magneticmarketing.com.
Yeah. I think he does one once a month under their,
yeah,
under their umbrella.
So. Yep. It's like the 46th time he sold that business to somebody. Nobody seems to be able to run it. Except him. Buys it back, resells it, buys it back, resells it.
That's right.
It's awesome.
Well, if there's someone, I think Russell Brunson might be able to. I mean, the guy's got a good, pretty good track record.
Yeah. Long as he stays out of wrestling meets, he'll be
That's
fine.
That's right. Exactly. All right. Well, good stuff. To all of our listeners, you check us out, persuasionbythepint.com. You can find us on all of your platforms. And Sean, it's been fun. This is good stuff. I'm going to keep going through it. Maybe we might have a part two on it.
Sounds good.
See ya.
See ya.